Today's reading comes from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 15, verses 25 through 34. It was 9 in the morning when they crucified him. The written notice of the charges against him read, "The King of the Jews." They crucified two rebels with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "So, you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days? Come down from the cross and save yourself." In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. Let this Messiah, this King of Israel, come down from the cross, that we may see and believe." Those crucified with him also heaped insults on him. At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. And at 3 p.m, Jesus cried out, in a loud voice, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?"
Kelly?
Here.
All right, where's Jared?
Present.
Okay, looks like everybody's here. Whew. Okay, now that attendance is done, I'm gonna move on to the lesson. Today's lesson is extremely exciting. I'm sure that you'll be very excited to learn about it. Let me see if I can remember how to share my screen here. Okay, here we go. Ready?
Did that really just happen?
I mean, I can understand him being bad with technology. I mean, it's a human invention, but seriously?
Coming back, right?
Okay, deep breaths.
Ah!
Okay. No! Deep breaths.
No!
Okay, it's not that big a deal. He just left the Zoom meeting. Calm down, we can figure this out.
Does anyone remember what we were going to learn today?
I'll try emailing him.
Wait, we have no supervision right now and no idea when or if God is ever going to come back. We can do whatever we want.
All right, I sent the email. I don't know if you received it or not, so I'm going to start praying.
I'm not really sure what's going on anymore, but I feel like it's been a really long time since God left.
I don't know about you guys, but I don't want to be late for my next class.
Yeah, she's right. Let's go.
Okay, bye guys. I guess I'll see you tomorrow.
Wait a minute. I'm back. Where's everybody?
Well, it's time for us all to go to our next class. So maybe we can just try again tomorrow?
I gotta get better at this technology thing.
Of course I know how to screen share. It just didn't work this time.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael West and I'm currently a senior at Calvert Hall College High School up in Towson. I'm planning on going to college and majoring in computer science. And in my free time, I enjoy playing video games, riding my bike, and watching movies and TV shows. So, obviously right now I'm going through the college application process, and it's pretty stressful, you know. You do all your work for 4 years of high school, and then you never know. I mean, especially this year with the way college admissions have shaken out, it's pretty much turned into, you know, some certain colleges just picking names out of a hat, or so it seems like. And so this takes me back in February. I was having a pretty rough day, so University of Virginia decisions, UVA decisions came out on February 5th, and I was really hoping to get in because I like UVA. And so I got deferred from UVA, which means that they pushed my decision back until the end of March. And then on top of that, I got cut from a band that I was auditioning for that I'd been working really hard for about 3 months trying to make so that I could participate in an activity called Drum Corps with them over the summer. So needless to say, I was having a pretty bad day, and I mean, it was about 1 o'clock, and I was feeling really down. You know, I logged out of my Zoom call for my class and went to eat lunch, and I called my mom, and I was just like, "Mom, you know, it would make me feel better Chinese food. So we ordered Chinese food to make me feel better. And we were talking about the day, and I was lamenting, you know, how sad I was. And then I was just kind of opening my fortune cookie, and I was going to be like, oh boy, I can't wait for, you know, such a generic fortune, like, oh, your smile makes everything better, or something like that. And the fortune I got just kind of like, it blew my mind. I'm not a big, I haven't really seen many signs of God in my life. I'm not a huge proponent of that. You know, I don't really seek out the stories of signs of God in everyday life, but this is probably the first time I've ever felt God calling to me. And it has like a really deep connection to the message I'm going to attempt to convey here today. So if you want to see what the fortune cookie said at the end, make sure to stick around. All right. So today we're going to be pretty much talking about the line, my God, why have you forsaken me? And its significance in the Bible. We're going to be talking about how to deal with it, what actions we can take in our day-to-day lives, you know, what lessons we can take from the Bible. So one verse that I wanted to highlight that is in the same vein is from the Old Testament, right? My God, you've forsaken me is from the New Testament. Obviously, you know, the whole Jesus getting crucified, that story, we'll talk about that. But first I wanted to highlight Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 6. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Basically, what I'm taking from this verse is, and this would be a great verse to, like, I'll talk about it, but have like a pocket verse, you know, when you're in trouble, maybe, you know, you're waiting for an operation to finish or waiting for some test results or something like that. This would be a great pocket verse to have. But what this is affirming is that God is always there for us. Even when we don't think he is, he's there. Be strong. The Lord is with you. Now, one example from the Old Testament, pulling from the Old Testament again, it's not from the Old Testament. It's a parable. It's a classic story. My bad. It's a pretty famous story that's recanted, and the lesson that's taught from it is normally a lot different than what I'm interpreting from it. And it's the story of the Good Samaritan, right? So everybody knows the story of the Good Samaritan. You're taught it in Bible school, you know, as a little kid. I mean, I probably learned it when I was like 4 or 3, something like that. But basically, for those that are unaware, there was a rabbi, or I think, no, he wasn't a rabbi. It was a normal citizen walking down the road when suddenly, you know, he was robbed by a group of bandits and left on the road for dead. And, you know, a rabbi walked by him, a countryman walked by him, and then suddenly the only person that stopped to help him was the Samaritan, who's his enemy. And the moral of that story is friendship, well, not friendship, but, you know, helping others, you know, doing a good deed, etc. But my take from it is, God was looking after the person, right? God didn't just leave the person, didn't just leave the man on the side of the road, robbed by the robbers. He called that Samaritan to go and put a little inkling in the Samaritan's heart to help him out, right? The Samaritan believed in God. And if God hadn't sent the Samaritan, you know, we don't know what would have happened to the man. But because God was looking out for him, he survived and made it through. Now, how does this tie in? Well, literally, right, from a literal sense, the guy was abandoned on the side of the road. And, you know, it's pretty hard to admit when you're feeling abandoned on the side of the road that God is still there, right? You feel alone. You feel upset. I get it. We've all been there numerous times. Trust me. But you just kind of have to keep it in your mind that God is there and you'll get through this stronger. The outcome may not be what you expect, but don't worry. Or it may not even be what you want, but don't worry. God will be there for you, right? You know, Jesus, as we'll talk about later, didn't want to die on the cross. He literally asked God, you know, can I not do this, pretty much? And he then eventually just trusts in God and trust that his plan will go through. And it did. And here we are today. You know, there's... The way I kind of see it is, I don't really think about God on a everyday basis. Like, thinking about God, you know, providing for me, protecting for me, isn't in my head 24/7, right? I'm not thinking about it. You know, I'm not sitting in class thinking about, oh, you know, God's really helping me take these notes. It's more of a subconscious thought, personally, for me. This may be completely different for you, and that's okay. It's all about personal relationships, right? But in the back of my mind, there's just kind of this rock that God is there, you know, and nothing bad, nothing truly bad. What I may think it's bad, but it's not bad in the grand scheme of things, will happen to me because God is protecting me. So as we talk about this and, you know, try to get a sense of how can we feel this way, you know, how can I, you know, why should I feel this way? You know, how can I develop that sense that God is always there for me? Let's take a look at the actual Bible verse. The Bible verses we're covering here, Mark chapter 15, an excerpt from it, and talk about how Jesus approached it. At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. And at 3 p.m, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani?" I'm very sorry if I butchered any of that. I do not speak Hebrew. Or Aramaic in this case. My bad, it's not Hebrew. And it means, my God, why have you forsaken me? When some of those standing near heard this, they said, "Listen, he's calling Elijah." This is important for a couple reasons, right? I just want to stop here. So they mentioned that he's calling Elijah. And this is interesting because there's two interpretations for this, right? One, the spirit of Elijah is kind of seen as a figure in the Bible and especially among the people of that time as kind of a sign from God or God's messenger, chariot, because if you remember, you know, Elijah was taken up into heaven directly as opposed to the normal process of dying and, you know, we assume the soul goes. You know, the spirit of Elijah is directly mentioned in Luke chapter 1, verse 17. Personally, so that's like the kind of canonical representation of it, right? You know, the people are so fixated on Elijah coming down from the heavens that they're not even witnessing, you know, that Jesus is actually the Son of God. And he, you know, this is even a greater event than Elijah, right? They're so focused on looking for Elijah and looking for God's signs that they're ignoring God's signs right in front of them, being the Son of God. I also took from this that this is kind of a callback. So I'm in AP English right now, and a lot of AP English is drawing really abstract conclusions from books, you know, talking about callbacks to other works of literature. I think they're called aphorisms, if I remember right. If my English teacher, Mr. Harris, if you're watching this and I said that wrong, please don't take points away. But I remember the story of Elijah, and as I was reading this and, you know, there was that callback to Elijah, I kind of drew a similarity, right? Jesus is all alone at the top of his cross. A lot of times, you know, in biblical imagery or paintings, you know, there's the three crosses and Jesus is, you know, at the front one, you know, maybe he's at the top of the hill or maybe he's, you know, the cross is taller. It depends on your interpretation or what media you're looking at. But I always thought Jesus is the closest person to God at that moment, right? Because he's literally being lifted above everyone. And this is kind of like Elijah being lifted up on the chariot, right? So in this way, Jesus is kind of like Elijah, and God's trying to symbol this to the people that, you know, Jesus is my son, you know, look at him. Now, the people aren't really getting this because they're still focused on Elijah, but that's besides the point. Now, the other interesting part is the line I probably butchered, the Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani. This is Aramaic, and it's Aramaic was a language that wasn't really spoken as much by the Romans, but the Greeks and the Jews of that time, the normal citizens that Jesus would have been interacting with, probably knew it. However, it was not, you know, the official language, the most spoken language. And what I took from this was that Jesus is having a private conversation with God, right? As opposed to just yelling out something in the common tongue for everyone to hear, he's directly imploring him, sending a message to him for only God's ears. And it's, my God, why have you forsaken me? You know, and this is really personal, and it basically, this may be the only point in time in the Bible where Jesus actually kind of gets angry at God in a way or, you know, feels abandonment from him. Now, the next line in this passage is, someone ran, filled a sponge with wine vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes down to take him, he said. Now, this is another really interesting part. So this is kind of like duality. First off, obviously, it's talking about, you know, Elijah coming down, the Son of God, you know, Elijah being the most significant event for people at that time, you know, because he was consumed to heaven, and they're not even focusing on the fact that Jesus is dying right in front of them. Now, the other part of this is that in a literal sense, right, if God sent Elijah down to Jesus, he'd be looking out for him and being there for Jesus in his weakest moment, his, you know, worst part of his life. That's also true, in my opinion. You know, if God was going to send Elijah's spirit down, he'd be looking out for Jesus. This whole thing just wraps up being kind of ironic. You know, Jesus is the Son of God and he's dying right there. Yet the people are just waiting for Elijah to appear to show that God is, you know, there. And, you know, they want the sign from God to be Elijah, when in reality, Jesus is the sign from God. From this whole passage, the great preacher Charles Spurgeon had some observations on it. And there are two important quotes that I drew from his work. The first quote is, "It is easy to believe in God when life smiles upon you, but it is much more difficult to believe in God when life frowns upon you." Obviously, this is just like super true. When things are going great, you know, you get the A on your test, or you get into Maryland, or, you know, you get a promotion at work or a raise. You feel great. You feel like, you know, you thank God for your blessings. You praise him, you know. But it's really hard when you go through hardship. You know, maybe you lose your job or someone in your family dies, you know, to praise God and look at God for strength. You know, you kind of feel like he's abandoned you because, oh, it's a bad thing happening to me. And I get that. You know, I feel that exact same way, right? Everyone does. Even Jesus felt it, right? My God, why have you forsaken me? Why am I going through this? Why are you doing this to me? Now, Spurgeon also had a really vivid piece of imagery in his work, and this kind of ties into our next passage that we're going to discuss, Psalm 22. My God, both hands grabbing God, where are you? And this basically represents Jesus's, you know, when he's talking about my God, why have you forsaken me? Hence the similarity between my God, between Spurgeon's line and the line in the Bible. Jesus is pretty much reaching out with both hands to God, trying to, you know, grab on. I always imagine it, you know, God is there, you know, sitting with his feet dangling off the throne or something, and Jesus is grabbing on to the, to you know, his feet as the Romans are pulling him down to the earth. That's kind of my take from this. That's kind of the way I see it in my head, but you can see it completely different. Basically, even Jesus, who is God, who, you know, he's a human like us, but he also is God, is still clinging to God. And if it's okay for Jesus to cling to God with both hands, you best bet I'm going to cling to God with both hands. Don't feel embarrassed. Don't feel ashamed at all for, you know, being worried and reaching out to God for help in your worst times. Jesus did it too. So anyways, the line, my God, is also repeated in Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? So far from my cries of anguish? My God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer, by night, but I find no rest. Yet you are enthroned as the Holy One. You are the one Israel praises. In you our ancestors put their trust. They trusted and you delivered them. To you they cried out and were saved. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. This is once again just affirming my entire point from this, which is, yes, you're going to feel abandoned. Yes, you're going to feel doubtful and hurt and alone, but God will always provide for you. You will pull through. The psalm mentions, you know, he's enthroned as the Holy One. The Israelites praise him. You know, all the ancestors put in their trust. And then in line 4, if you're following along, the line is, in you our ancestors put their trust. They trusted and you delivered them. This is like the most important line in the psalm for me personally. You know, it's talking about the Israelites worshiping God and God, you know, providing for them. And I mean, this has been proven way more times than I can count on my hands. I mean, my favorite example, you know, is the plagues of Egypt and the Exodus, you know, and them leaving Egypt and God getting them safely out of Pharaoh. You know, God sent Jesus to provide for them. You know, countless times and times again, the Israelites were saved by their faith and their conviction in God to provide on them, you know, when they could have turned to other gods, you know, and worshiped false idols. You know, they stuck true, even when the going got rough. Now, there's a couple of examples that are non-biblical of people in the modern day putting their faith in God, especially in their worst times. You know, there was a guy in World War I, Alvin York, who his, I don't know the exact military terminology here, but like his squad of men was tasked with capturing a German machine gun position that could turn the tide of battle as the Allies were trying to capture a fortification. It went really south. Half a squad was dead or injured. And, you know, this underranked man, Alvin York, you know, the chain of command was completely broken. He took command, ended up capturing 132 German soldiers by single-handedly capturing the machine gun and turning it on them and saying, you know, and they surrendered at that point because he had the high ground, he had the machine gun. York, when asked about it, said, "A higher power than man guided and watched over me and told me what to do." You know, once again, you know, I always think of this, you know, obviously I think of the kind of glorified, sensationalized movie portrayal of World War I, right? You know, there's some poor 20-some-year-old American guy sitting in the trench, you know, huddled over as it's raining, you know, with his helmet on, you know, crying because his squad mates are dead. And then suddenly he just gets this feeling over him that, you know, God's there, God's guiding him, God's watching over him. And he just, you know, charges out, you know, and he's like glowing and invincible, you know, all the bullets are going past him as he takes the machine gun turret and then they surrender. That's the way I always think about it. Obviously, I'm over-sensationalizing it, but he mentioned that, you know, he couldn't have done this without his faith in God and the knowledge that God was there to protect him no matter what. A little bit more in the recent day, in the 21st century example, is Stanley Pramuth. He was in the building of the Trade Towers during 9/11, and he was actually in the direct impact zone where the planes crashed in. To this day, he's the only person to still be alive from the impact zone that we know of. He recovered in a hospital bed days after the attack, traumatized and delirious. He didn't recognize his wife, and the doctors told him they never knew if he would even mentally recover. He lay there listening to his own thoughts, wondering about his purpose in the world in the wake of such a miraculous escape. He heard someone say that life's answers were in the Bible. He asked his wife to hand him this. But this is referring to the Bible. He opened it to Psalm 91, verse 1, and started reading. "He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and He is my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely He will save you from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and rampart. You will not fear the terror of the night, nor the arrow that flies by the day, nor the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, nor the plague that destroys at midday. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come near you." Pramuth said he snapped out of it right then, and to this day, he is now a pastor, spreading his faith in God, who carried him through that day. Now, there's a lot to dissect in Psalm 91, obviously. You know, "My God is my fortress" is, you know, a pretty popular church hymn. It's also, you know, parts of Psalm 91 are, as I mentioned before, a pocket verse, you know, that people carry around them written with a sheet of paper. Or, you know, that they memorize and, you know, they just recite, you know, they get into a car crash, they're sitting on the side of the road waiting for the ambulance to arrive, they just recite the same Bible verse, and Psalm 91 is one of them. I'm not really going to dig in depth into Psalm 91, that's not the point, but the point here is that, you know, divine, God's strength and courage, you know, God was literally his fortress against the planes in this scenario. Without God, Pramuth says he wouldn't have made it out, or survived afterwards. And I mean, it seems pretty clear to me. Now, from these examples and from the scripture I mentioned, how can we carry this in our lives, right? You know, we're not Jesus, obviously. We're not the Israelites, and we're not some World War I soldier trying to, you know, defeat the Germans down to his final straw. Well, I think we can do this a couple ways, right? Never lose hope is the first one. When you become hopeless, things just tend to get worse, right? Always keep hope, right? Things are going down. Never lose your hope. Always keep fighting, right? If you're fighting, if you keep that spark in you and you keep your faith in God, God will provide for you. A really cheesy line here, but, you know, I think it's from Star Wars. If I'm wrong, please don't get upset with me, but rebellions are based on hope, right? As long as you have hope, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. You can also remain calm, right? Don't get angry at situations that are way out of your control. And because, you know, God will be there, it'll all be okay in the end. You just got to keep telling yourself this. You got to think, you got to internalize it. It's been true for, you know, so many other people in the Bible. It's going to be true for you. One example, I'm a very new, young, inexperienced driver. And of course, you know, road rage is a thing. And, you know, when someone turns out of an intersection as I'm driving and I get scared and swerve, you know, it's really easy to get angry at that person and say, oh, you could have made me crash or something like that. But it's better to just deflect it and say, you know, God was looking out for me. I didn't get into an accident or, you know, nothing seriously bad happened to me because God was watching out for me. And that's why nothing bad happened here. Live with confidence and help rescue others, right? Use your faith to help the others that may not be as convinced or may not have the knowledge that you have, right? You know, your best friend at school is feeling really down. You know, they're feeling abandoned. You know, they're you know, 5 minutes away from saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because, you know, maybe they failed a spelling test or something. Talk to them, you know, maybe, you know, directly mention God, say, you know, hey, you know, that spelling test isn't everything. It'll be okay in the long run. Or, you know, you fail that spelling test for a reason. You may not be able to see it now, but looking back on it in, you know, maybe 5 years, you'll see that that spelling test was a sign from God for something else. Now, this is obviously a completely fabricated example, but that's just something that, you know, you can help people in your lives, help them find strength in God, knowing that you'll be able to get through things. And if we do all this, if we follow through with everything and, you know, we keep our faith in God and we remain calm and have confidence that everything will go our way like Jesus did, right? Even though Jesus said, my God, why have you forsaken me? He still went through. He didn't, you know, get off the cross or give up faith. He kept faith in his plan and he died on the cross for us as God intended. Personally, I think in our world, church, and community, we will see less fear and hatred in the world, right? You know, there will be less people getting, you know, scared of the unknowns, which leads them to do irrational things because faith in God can carry them through the unknowns. And there will also be less anger and quick to anger moments. Personally for me, like, it's so easy nowadays to, you know, see something on social media, you know, like a cat getting hit by a train or something. Yeah, that's a very graphic example. I'm sorry. But, and to just get really angry. But we can't control it. At the end of the day, we can't control it. It's not worth getting angry over because, you know, if it was something that was really bad that was going to affect us, God will be looking out for us anyway. And if you just keep that in mind, you can find that a lot of things that you get angry over that are out of your control, you become a lot more content and at ease, I feel, personally, with. So this leads me to what was the fortune that started all this and got me on this train of thought? What was, you know, my, I guess, first sign from God? And it says, God will help you overcome any hardship. And obviously, you know, my worst lows are very different from most of your worst lows. I mean, you know, getting deferred from a college is one of my worst days. You know, there are people who've experienced far much worse. But this really helped me get through it and keep a positive outlook. And now I'm, you know, I'm not worried about the college decision. You know, after doing some thinking prompted by this fortune cookie, I'm not really worried about the college decision process anymore because I know I'll end up wherever is best, wherever God thinks I can do the best or, you know, maybe have the best impact on the community. I think God has a plan and I'll end up wherever that is. And so if you take one thing from this sermon, and I know it's been, you know, pretty convoluted and, you know, I've gone through a bunch of different hoops, a bunch of examples, and you may have lost the point of the message, but it's keep confidence, keep firm in your faith. God will provide for you even when you're feeling abandoned, even when you're feeling lonely. I want this to be a message of hope so that even in your darkest hour, you have hope in God, you have faith, that he will carry on. As Pastor Mandy always says, go in peace to love and serve the Lord.